Hey folks, welcome to the show. Hey Sharad, how's it going, man?
It's going well. I'm looking forward to our chat, and obviously asset classes and fintechs and things like that are all broad buckets which interest us. So we're obviously looking at an interesting asset class, which is very topical again.
No, absolutely. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Alankar Saxena, co-founder and CTO of Mudrix. Welcome to the show, Alankar. How are you?
Hi, Nikhil. Thanks for having me here. I'm good.
And with the end of 2023 and the beginning of 2024, crypto has been the flavor again after 12 to 15 month gap, at least within mainstream narrative. Recently, we saw, I think, a few of the international exchanges such as Binance, Kraken, etc., their apps being removed from the Indian App Store. And we also saw Mudrix has now an arrangement with Binance to introduce free exchange. Bitcoin ETFs have been authorized in the US. And so a lot of things going on. And I'd like to start with, by the end of the year, I kind of read this newsletter by called the Noah's Opinion, which had a very interesting headline saying Bitcoin is a special interest group. And the fact that, a lot of people's wealth now depends on mass adoption of Bitcoin brings us to a very interesting inflection point. So would love to, first hear from you. Number one, how do you think 2023 panned out for cryptocurrency or crypto market as a whole? And what's your view on 24 in terms of broad predictions, both at a global as well as in an India-specific background?
Sure, yeah. I think it's really exciting times for Web3 now again after a long time. It's 2023, I think, was a pretty dull year from the point of view in market sentiment-wise, as well as I would say people perceiving the or trying to, chase the regulatory clarity from governments in various parts of the world. So I think some positive momentum started getting building, and things like MiCA happening in Europe, UK Parliament approving regulatory clarity on the what assets they are trying to tax and legalize, and US also taking a very hard stance on the Binance case that happened with SEC, I think provided a lot of regulatory clarity to the overall doubts and fears that people had, and that started building the momentum for some investors' mindset getting positive. And then with Bitcoin halving now coming in 2024, it seems like that momentum will double down and take us to a little bit of a bull market, at least for some time. I think that interesting point about the inflection point,
this is probably not the first inflection point, right? Every 2 years, there's an inflection point.
Yeah, every year is an inflection point. So, or every 2 years, yeah, in the case of Bitcoin. So, I'm not very sure if this is it, if this is the one. Definitely, if we are coming out of a bear market, and seems like we are progressing towards a momentum of bull run, at least in terms of Bitcoin and the primary cryptocurrencies.
So, let's talk a bit about...
We talked about inflection points and being multiple. So it's sort of become a very cyclical play, right? Even from investors, it's sort of become a macro rather than evaluating the individual asset, or whether it's a Bitcoin or an Ethereum or whichever it is. People don't care. It's not about, in the stock equity world, we look at stock picking as one way to sort of generate value. Here, it's sort of, forget stock picking, it's just, if the entire market is bullish, then you sort of make money as an investor. If it's bearish, it goes down. What needs to happen for that cyclicality to sort of break away, to actually say that this is the inflection point? Is it just regulatory certainty across the world? Like, is that the only missing piece here to convert it from a cyclical to a much more standardized or predictable ecosystem?
I think just comparing it with stocks is a little bit unfair for the, say, the blockchain revolution, as per se. I think that's the one difference, that yes, it is an asset, but because it's sort of like a technological revolution, or sort of say, we can compare it with the, we can call it as big as the internet, right? So now you are, when you say, when you're betting on Bitcoin, you're betting on the internet, sort of. Mm-hmm. So if we try to make that kind of comparisons, some sort of inflection point of, so sort of like a major historical point across 100 years might be required other than the cyclical adoptions that happen. And I think in that point of view, regulatory clarity in major economies definitely is some sort of macro lens that this asset class does rely on. But the rest of it, I think it can be taken from a lens of stock picking as well, because a lot of chains are developing decentralized applications, and they are just like products. Like when we have Swiggy, when we have the likes of Uber or e-commerce. So those kind of use cases are product use cases, and I think those kind of decentralized applications will evolve, and they will not be like a one. There will be competition. There will be like multiple apps, multiple coins. And then that will, I think, more correlate with the stock picking use case there. But this major primary, let's say, base chain cases, which is Bitcoin, Ethereum, or I would say even at some places, Solana, and the other primary chains which are trying to come, does have some macro fundamental understandings for the investor's point of view to be taken. And I think placing that bet at the right time can return, you know, large amounts as well if you get the base chains investment right. It's a little bit of a gamble, I would say. It's not really the traditional way of stock picking or like you might not be able to analyze everything, you know. You'd like in stocks, you would like to understand the P/E ratios. You try to understand the fundamentals, and you try to analyze as much before you make a large investment, and then you try to diversify. But at least in the base chains case, I think the way you think about diversification is a little different. And I think now, Mutrix, for example, offers a coin set called the Crypto Blue Chip and a smart contract thematic platform basket, I think, which tries to cover this as a theme rather than thinking of diversification in the traditional sense. So that's my point of view as a difference from traditional markets.
You know, it's very interesting because I think, and this is something which also got reflected in the year-end newsletter, the one that I was alluding to earlier during this conversation, where Bitcoin was being tagged as a special interest group. The main angle that they were pursuing was that effectively, the original use case of Bitcoin was to use it as a mode of payment, replacing fiat, and that hasn't. At least that was the view of the writer, that hasn't really become mainstream. I mean, on fringes it exists, but in mainstream society, that's something that has not really picked up. But what has really happened is, without the involvement of governments, without the involvement of taxation, without the involvement of armies or militaries, Bitcoin as a store of value or an asset class has been established one way or the other. Right now, is your view that and we are also aware that within the decentralized finance ecosystem, things like Bitcoins or Ethereum are used as internal modes of payment to incentivize stakeholders one way or the other, and that's where the value lies. Is that what is that characterization accurate from your standpoint? And the moving piece right now is probably how the regulator and the wider market adopts and perceives it.
Correct. I think that's exact, the right characterization. You can compare it to from lens of a Visa as well. Let's say if you want to say all the payment rails in the world right now are controlled by Visa, and Visa charges 0.5% to 3% based on what rail it is of payment. From that lens, the Bitcoin and the native token that is getting used as the incentive mechanism is the value getting added to the network. And once, let's say, the adoption comes of the, let's say, the native token is still just the, let's say, the fees part of the transactions. But the thing that is trading on the blockchain, for example, that can be as big as a real estate fund or a REIT or a just a goods getting traded, commodity trading as well. So even then the fees incentive mechanism makes sense. So the adoption of which layer, which chain will make it valuable and from that characterization.
And when you say chains, right, I mean, for the benefit of ourselves as well, but a bunch of guys who are listening were probably not well versed. Like, we, you know, we see of Ethereum, we talk about Ethereum on one end. We also, and we think of Polygon and Matic, and all these guys are sort of under the same ethos, if I'm not wrong. And then there is guys like Solana. And when we look at cryptocurrency, the three things that we talk about it solving are like decentralization, which can be thought of as safety. Then there is cost and speed, right? These are the three big pieces which we're trying to tackle here. How do these two change? Like, how are they tackling that? And what how does that come into the mix, not just from an investor, but also from a tokenization standpoint who are trying to build products off one of those two? How does that mechanics work?
Sure. So I think for these, you know, I would say base chains, if you characterize Polygon, Bitcoin, Ethereum as base chains or L1 chains, you know, I think that's the technical industry word more primarily used, that L1 chains. So if Bitcoin specializes in the, you know, store of value because it's like highly secure and really difficult to, you know, mine. So the mining difficulty there is making Bitcoin more valuable in terms of store of value. While Ethereum right now has the best as the L1 chain, the developer's friendliness. So you can't develop like, let's say, you know, many applications or games right now on Bitcoin, but you can do that with the smart contract platform that Ethereum has, and they have a language, Solidity, that you can develop decentralized applications. That's why more use cases like that are, you know, favored on Ethereum as the primary L1 chain. So to compare them across, like, I think security becomes, like, which chain offers security as the main, you know, primary use case. Those kind of use cases should be served by that chain. If, you know, for example, gaming is a very big industry. NFT is another big industry getting developed over long. So the kind of chains which support, I think, those kind of use cases will, or, you know, leverage those chains more. So I think, in my view, that's how the development on these chains or the competition of these chains should be assessed.
Interesting. And, you know, I mean, we're sort of jumping back and forth between the technicalities of it and from the investment and investment nature of it. Like, you know, one of the things that I often run into, and it's very basic. Let's say I invested in Bitcoin or Ethereum and I've seen some gains of it, right? I've probably used an exchange, let's say, much like yourselves. What happens next? If I want to, for me as a retail investor, for me to sort of get rewards from my bet on, at some point, I probably would like to convert it into fiat. How does that happen? Like, I feel like the tax authorities are not clear on what will happen. Can I just pull it out? Do I have to park it in a wallet? There are just so many misconceptions and, you know, I don't even know what the right answer is. But how does, if I want to sort of withdraw it and turn into fiat, what is the taxation impact? Is it possible? What happens? Like, that's sort of the, you know, there's lack of clarity around it, which I think also feeds into this. So what is the current ecosystem like for, let's say, an Indian retail investor?
Yeah, I think that's the primary question for most of the people who want to at least, you know, try learning and try to invest in it, because, you know, not everyone is going to develop the thing always. You just want to understand and invest and then, you know, take gains out of it. So the 2023, I think, was a very significant year in terms of providing this regulatory clarity, not just in India, but also outside. So India, for example, now has an FIU license that only was given to the few entities who were, you know, who were the right fit to get that license. So Putrex is one of them. And now this, you know, apps closure that we have seen today is actually a resultant of that whole, you know, thing that happened last year. And I think government has now made clarifications of how the, you know, money laundering reporting has to be done, how every exchange has to take care of that, how the taxation reporting has to be done. Last 2023 was the first year when actually India paid taxes on crypto. So that time the confusion was, I would say, much higher. This time a lot of CAs have figured out, okay, right, this is the, you know, that's how I want to recommend to my client what is the taxation, how you go about it, what is the rule. And there is still some, you know, unclarity about, you know, this part, that because I cannot offset my gains to this, so it's to my losses. Do I still, you know, what type of asset class I'm categorizing it into?
Yeah.
But, you know, barring that aside, the rule of what, if you make one transaction, what is the TDS you have to pay? And then at the end, on the profits, this is the amount of tax you have to pay. That is, you know, pretty clear. Now, how to optimize that further? I think that is something that will grow over the time. But at least the base rules being clear and not being, you know, just left in like 2018, it was still not clear whether it's even 30%. So I think that big jump from there to getting to that number first. And I think from there, more optimizations and how you categorize this asset class better will come Indian rules as well. So I'm hoping this year, even in this year, we are in conversations with FIU as well. We are trying to, you know, work with the governmental authorities always to make sure that we are regulatory fully compliant as a platform, as well as we are able to give users this clarity. And similarly, they are also getting to help from us about the expectations of taxation and what rules and how this asset class should be categorized. So,
because I think even in your own platform, we have noticed a fair bit of effort and work has gone in terms of investor education, right? You have now embedded a fair number of tools to, you know, make sure you can do, you have tax calculators embedded. Also on the product end, I think if I recall, the last time we had spoken, CoinSets was part of your offering, right? That was probably the starting point, which was more of a quote-unquote mutual fund or an ETF type of framework, but for cryptocurrencies. But over time, you have migrated into becoming a wider exchange of sorts for individual crypto asset classes.
Yeah.
I do appreciate your point that, you know, with taxation coming in, a fair amount of regulatory legitimacy gets added to the ecosystem. And the players who are licensed, they also have a competitive advantage as a result of that, right? But generally, what's been your view on, and it's a tricky question because I'm going to ask you, what's your view on the Indian regulator? Are they consultative? Are they working towards making this a larger segment going forward? Or are they predatory in nature, for the lack of a better word? And there is some basic level of mistrust because often from different constituents of or different stakeholders within the government, you hear conflicting statements coming out, right? Which as a retail investor, you hear both sides, right? So it often gives a confusing message. But because you are at the table, you know, I'm guessing with the Reserve Bank of India, with other stakeholders from a regulatory standpoint, what's your view or perception? Some segments, I mean, sorry, just to kind of add another layer to that question, there's definitely a push towards localization, even within crypto, in the sense that government wants the crypto flows to happen through local players or local entities on which it has some sort of a supervisory, sense of visibility, which, I mean, for me, it makes a fair amount of logical sense.
I have a little different lens altogether on this question because generally, when institutions ask this question, they try to make it sound like the regulator is, you know, going after the institutions to make less money. But in reality, the regulator's, you know, whole concern is to stop the small retail players getting affected by things, you know, by scams or by, you know, drastic movements of things which can negatively impact their own investments. And to just give an example, Shiba Inu is still one of the most invested coins in India on our, like, it is, let's say, the third highest on our platform, I'm sure, on Coindesix and some other competitive platforms in India which are exchanging cryptocurrencies. This is the trend as well. And I think to balance out the retail education on cryptocurrencies with the regulatory framework is a very important from the regulator's lens, because it's not really like there. My view is that I don't think any regulator would be against an asset class to be developed. At least from the Indian point of view, I should not say any regulator. From Indian regulator's point of view, I have not seen predatory nature in terms of stopping or banning, but always trying to take a stance which is good for the retail investors of India and giving clarity, because at the same time, the European regulators were also not giving that clarity. The US regulators were also not giving clarity to Binance, for example. So in my view, that has been like very progressive in the last few years. And I think at least on the Indian market economics and the education levels that India has and the retail investments that happen in stock markets of India, from that point of view, taking these kind of stances is not predatory, but more like progressive and balancing out with the right education mindset.
Right. You know, we can maybe take now a segue into like when we hear crypto, we also hear Web 3.0, we hear blockchain. Lately, we have also been hearing a lot of AI being tagged with blockchain or the crypto ecosystem. Treat us as laymen, which we are to a certain extent in this domain. Is it some sort of a, you know, new buzz word or buzz phrase which helps companies raise a lot of capital? But how does AI actually fit within the wider blockchain or cryptocurrency ecosystem? It's a very layman question, so.
I think I'm the same. So because it's not like we are deep into AI as a company. So I would say my view in terms of how it relates to blockchain, but I think on the broader view, it's a great technological advancement and definitely a good segment for people to invest in those companies. So now coming to how, like, we have been, you know, also we as Mudrex, we have looked at use cases, creating how to help investors use this, you know, new technological front along with the blockchain technologies. So from the investor's point of view, there you can get more help now in education by using these kind of tools that we have, you know, you were mentioning that we have added tools which educate better and better. So we are using AI, SaaS tools, so to say, that, you know, we are partnering with some companies who are making us better, helping us make better educational items which future investors can help. But in terms of blockchain and AI being together as a, I think, chain use case, it is still out of the box ideas are getting discussed, where, you know, AI writes its own smart contract and publishes something to the chain. There are some POCs, I would say, going on at this moment, nothing concrete that is, I think, looking forward to in the 6 months. But I think after that, maybe some very interesting use case comes up which is a handshake between AI and blockchain. And
because I mean, the reason why I think it caught our mainstream attention was like, for example, in case of app stores, right? We've been seeing that the kind of oligopoly of Google and Apple when it comes to app store control, that's slowly being challenged or broken. And I think there were some favorable judgments recently against them. And then, you know, with that kind of gets coupled with the rise of decentralized app stores. And that obviously will be have blockchain-based kind of technology. And I assume the role of blockchain there would be, like any app store, quality control and making sure what individual developers have built out actually makes sense from a retail user standpoint. Now, you also hear narratives of like, you know, an AI layer on top of that in terms of searchability of those app stores or in terms of, you know, indexation of those app stores. Are you seeing some interesting projects which are going on in that bucket from your vantage point?
I would say because it's the LLMs or sort of the development of LLMs is still, you know, it started in 2023, ChatGPT becoming this, and they have just now opened their own app store. Mm-hmm. So I would say the more investor interest or let's say the projects still is more in phase of traditional apps getting used and, you know, adopting that. And maybe once I would say money flowing into those kind of projects reach a little successful stage, then these kind of projects will also get funded. So I would say maybe 6 months later. Right now, I think the excitement is more around ChatGPT's open store and then Google's coming with its Gemini models and maybe they also opening their own apps store to develop things across that. So I think that adoption phase is still a little separate industry at this moment, or right. At least from the investor's point of view, if I take that lens. But I think blockchain separately altogether is going to have their own, you know, important moments this year, which is the halving is coming in April, and a lot of negative clarities that are had to happen, whether it was FTX, Binance, clarity, UK and Europe's regulatory clarity. So if you combine all of that, there's good positive momentum that is going to come in the blockchain space and blockchain as an investment asset class.
We've been sort of, been very closely advising a company, a sort of, it's a Web 3.0 company. And we see that, and they often want to raise capital from VC, from the VC ecosystem, and there is a token warrant thrown in as a form of raising money. And the moment that sort of comes in, the initial thought is, I'm going to raise it not from Indian investors. It has to be a Singapore-based investor or UK-based investor or maybe even American investor, right? Because they feel like the Indian institutional investor network is not yet ready to sort of take the plunge into token warrants or understand, they don't have theses built, and which is something that we need to fix soon, right? I mean, if this is sort of the way forward, then we need to sort of, and that's where you're sort of coming from. In according to you, which geography do you think is sort of front running or acting the quickest in terms of moving this to mainstream and legalizing it and taking the more bullish tone? Because I mean, US has done a little bit of back and forth. I mean, we thought that they'll never come out with a Bitcoin ETF, but here we are now. There's a Bitcoin ETF. I mean, at Davos, all these guys are talking. Shakti Kanta Das says he used the word risky. I mean, he's not talking about its legitimacy, but he's saying, like you rightly said, it's more coming from a people should understand the risks of it. So, which sort of suggests that, yeah, we know what it is, we're okay with it, but it's risky. I mean, that's still not a negative tone. So which geography do you think is sort of, which regulatory body is sort of front running this?
I think that's a great question, because I think India has took a very hard stand against ICOs in 2018-19, yeah, with the ICO boom period. And at that time, the geographies which, so I think primarily Singapore was like the Indian, entities trying to move to Singapore to figure out that we can do ICOs there. But then Singapore also changed its stance in 2019, and then that became a problem statement for those founders who went to there in that geography to again change it back to some other place. So I think currently, because there was not much tokenization going on last year, so there is no front-running player, but definitely India is not very, very positive in terms of token. This is very, I think, correct understanding that for the founders building and trying to raise capital via the token way, I think Indian institutional environment needs to quickly figure that out, that if we want to chase the next ICO boom, we should have regulatory clarity around that and how you go about raising via the tokens method as a company compared to other places. So I would say there are a couple of geographies in Europe and some in LATAM region that I think are right now chosen entities to set up your at least the the entity to where you can raise in token. But US and India are not the right choices at this moment.
That's, and sort of moving towards Mudrex, right? Like, I think what 1 million users right now on your sort of exchange, is that number broadly correct? What needs to happen sort of to take that 1 million to 5 million and subsequently to 20, 50 million, right? Like, how do you sort of see that? Obviously, regulatory is a big piece here, but what else needs to sort of happen for it to sort of, and I think even of your user base, I think a big chunk is European, right? Italian, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah. So, but primarily, I think 90% of our users are English, but also have a significant Italian user base.
Okay.
So, yes. I would go to that Noah's point of inflection point there. Maybe some people looking for that inflection point changes that from 1 million to 5 million. But having said that, we were going through a bear cycle last year. So I think all the growth efforts that we were trying to make always was so negatively correlated with the market sentiment, right? Always. So I think this time, education is better, regulatory clarity, etc. I would say when I talk to customers, I see there's a significant change in the mood, how they perceive our communication and conversations as well. So at least from people who are trying to see this from the investment portfolio now, understand, okay, I can put 2%, 3% of my portfolio, bigger in, understand, people who understand more can put up to 5, 10, 15% of their portfolio. And obviously, if you are Bitcoin believer, you can, or a blockchain believer, you can go 100% as well. But I would advise against it. I think we are looking to onboard 5 million users by the end of 2025 at this point. So this year, we are already seeing this month, a lot of activity has increased, a lot of investment increased. Actually, we have almost doubled our AUM last month. So it's a pretty strong sign of the investors' interest getting back to this asset class, and hope that bull run and this momentum continues and there's no FTX like event this year. Mm-hmm. So I think that can take us there.
Yeah, a little bit. How does I think you have a wallet as well, Saber.money, like that's sort of more on the B2B side. How can you just also talk us a little bit on how does it work on the B2B front? Like what is an exchange like yourselves? Like, is it sort of helping companies invest, or is it sort of helping people build products on an existing link? Like, what does the B2B play for a crypto exchange look like?
So our B2B play is, we have just launched it 3-6 months back, and that was more because we're seeing a lot of people looking for this use case where you have made an application, but to start using that application, you need tokens. And really, the user doesn't care how, they want to experience the, whether it's a game, whether it's a NFT project, whether it's a... they don't want to go into the technicalities of how do I download a wallet? How do I make some token transfer to a particular chain? So user wants simplicity. And Saber was just a lot of conversations with other founders. We found, okay, this is a problem that they're facing. And we thought, okay, we have built this system and we can help other companies onboard seamlessly and in a very easy fashion via using UPI, IMPS rails, and directly give them the experience they want to offer there on their product just by transforming these fiat to a crypto. So Saber is a two-way transaction system where you can on-ramp fiat to crypto and then crypto to any fiat. And we provide SDKs and APIs to a lot of players. So Flipkart's right now, like one of the biggest partners of ours is Flipkart, where they power their reward program using our SDKs, and they leverage the fiat to crypto offering of ours there to give users the reward experience on their platform.
Right.
Interesting.
And, you know, on the retail investor end, like effectively crypto is interesting because here probably the role of a exchange and a broker are way more overlapping than traditional finance asset classes. So in terms of value addition, right, obviously from going from like a million to 5 million, it's correlated also to the wider interest and appetite for the asset class. But purely from a value addition, probably from a product development standpoint, what do you have in the pipeline? Like, would you be like adding more and more advisory, you know, analysis, insight layers on top of your classic, you know, it helps you execution a trade, it helps you execute a trade type of a framework? So yeah, what would be, what would that journey be like?
Taking it from two angles, one where there is a retail audience where education of what this asset class is, some sort of insights, whether it's fundamental, just things like, okay, this is a base chain, L1, this is L2.
Right.
These are the number of developers developing on these chains. So insights, fundamental insights, technical insights available for a retail investor on the platform to make quick decisions and easy decisions on the platform. So one is that. And then there is the trader kind of audience where we are creating tools like stop loss, take profits. Because interestingly, in our starting journey, we had a product called Algos, where we were offering traders to create a strategy of their own where they can buy and automate their buy and sell strategies on themselves via our platform. So we are going to you know, leverage that understanding and help traders get better tooling on the platform to have better trade management there. And the third, I think I will say, we also are in the pipeline of creating new investor products where we offer more choices of, you know, kind of risk, you know, more risk profiled products as well, where you can have more shorting and, you know, leverage options as well. So the third direction would be that broadening up the choices of investing products that are available on the platform for diversifying more of your portfolio into more more kind of products.
Right.
So shorting sort of as of now, is that something that's allowed? Because in equity markets, like the rules are very, very, very strong in rolling over overnight short positions, right, in the Indian market. So, I mean, shorting bit or crypto is probably shorting on steroids, if you will, from a risk standpoint, right? So is that something that's, what are the legal regulatory framework around that?
So I think there are, within cryptos, like there are difference between futures and then options. So we definitely tend to stay away from options because India doesn't even allow options to be traded in the traditional markets. But the futures part is, I think, set up in a different way because it's like BitMEX came up with a interesting asset. I think that was sort of a revolution in itself, where they created a lifetime future where you can bet, but it's a future without an expiry. So I think from that standpoint of view, I don't think it comes or categorizes in the same way the future, the short, like the options shorting would be categorized. So I think that part legally should not be a problem. But having said that, Mudrix is more right. Like we are trying to help people make the right investments in the product. So it's not like it's available for everybody and, or which, you know, which kind of users will be accessing this product, these kind of products. I think that will be over the journey of this year.
Right, right. So is there like a, like how do you ring fence the advisory element with the execution element within a business such as Mudrix?
I think that's tricky for any kind of broker/investment business, whether it's Gru, Zerodha, Robinhood, that you want to have the right product for the right user. Mm-hmm. So we ring-fence it from the personalizing retail users more. The product is personalized in a way that retail user who is looking for the investment use case more is taken into that product journey, and a person who is more into the trader focused kind of things are taken into that journey. For example, we have a web platform as well where we give some kind of options for traders to specifically do some things which are not available on the app, and vice versa. So these kind of things is based on the audience at this moment.
Right. No, I mean, on the feature end, I'm pretty clear, right? On the feature end, I think it works. And in the sense that obviously more level of sophistication or nudges and alerts, etc., can kind of protect you. But when it comes to like things like recommendations, mm-hmm. Of class A versus class B or basket A versus basket B.
I didn't get it. So actually we in from that point of view, we are never into advisory business.
Right.
That's the clarity. So right. We are always in the platform. Like, we are a broker, we are a platform. So we do not have, we are never saying, give us this AUM and I will invest in this A versus B, B basket. So that is very clear that we are not an advisor.
Right. No, Alankar, this was super helpful with regard to this ecosystem. There is heightened interest. Again, hopefully this one will last longer. And then next time we don't have to talk about the next inflection point because it would have arrived. It was a very exciting chat, very knowledgeable. Thank you so much. With that, it's Nikhil Arora. With me, it's Sharad Tupran signing off.